Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm Kelly.
Hello, I'm Jenny.
Hey, Jenny. Welcome to the show. So, we're doing something special. Why are we doing something special, McKelly? You always have the anniversaries. What is it?
Because the week that this episode airs, it will be our 4-year anniversary for our show.
Wow.
October 7th, 2019 was our, when our first episode went live. So
we have a special guest. Jenny, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, no need to thank us. You make the show way more interesting.
Well, I probably need to apologize for not being George, you know, because that's probably what they're expecting.
We've got him penciled in for the 5-year anniversary.
I told them to think bigger. There's only one person more important than George, and it's Jenny of Oldstones.
I'm pretty sure everybody wants to hear from George, but I will make up an ending.
Oh, that's yes. What we want, yes.
And when we get to news and notes, you'll hear about people making up endings and how George feels about it.
Exciting. Oh, I know what it is. I actually know that one for once, McKelly. All right, well, let's get on with the show. Thank you for joining us for episode 209 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 65 of A Storm of Swords. That's Aria 12.
And as we always do about this time, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. And hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the TV show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence.
Be sure to check out the show notes. They'll provide some additional information about the characters and other things of note in this chapter. Can I just say, actually, this works in three voices. I like it a lot.
It does.
I felt like I was going to feel bereft not saying my line, but it felt really good.
I know. I was kind of like, why am I saying Simon's line?
We're like a tripod now. We're more stable as opposed to just two legs. We've got that stabilizing third leg.
So, Jenny, we're turning to you for witty banter.
The listeners are tired of listening to what we have going on.
So I'm going to tell you guys a story about something that I saw in the town that I work in. Okay. It's been a few years ago now, but I don't think I will ever forget it. I was a passenger in the car, and we were coming up to a yield to oncoming traffic, so we were slowing down, and I look out the window, and there's a man sitting on his porch on the far end of it in one of those round wicker chairs that are kind of deep. Do you know which kind of chair I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so he was bare-chested and bare-legged, so he looked like he might not have been wearing anything.
But thankfully you couldn't
be
sure.
And I started to look away because I thought, that is none of my business. When he looked straight at me, stood up, he was wearing tighty-whitey underwear.
Okay.
He threw his hands down over his manly parts like he was trying to shield himself and proceeded to sidle like a crab to his screen door, which was completely glass, completely open.
What is happening?
And here? He opened the screen door and hid behind the screen door that was glass. So if he had just stayed seated in the chair, you know, or
you would have only had your imagination to rely on.
Yes. So, you know, the glass screen door hid him really well, and I don't think I've ever laughed so hard in my life.
That is fantastic. I mean, his reaction, yes. I mean, he must have known when he sat there that this was a possibility.
His porch presumably faced a road, right?
Yes, off-roading. Very busy road. I was like, why didn't he just stay in the chair?
Stay seated.
And of course, the driver didn't see any of that. Yes. So I just started crying laughing. And she was like, what is happening right now?
You were like, go around the block.
That is the things you see.
That is, I mean, there's a PhD in psychology lurking in there somewhere.
I think so. Either that or don't do drugs, kids.
Yeah.
Yes. One or the other. Maybe a little of both.
Maybe.
I mean, if he'd stood up and then sort of like, you know, sort of just hands on hips, macho pose kind of thing, I could have understood.
Right.
It.
Like he was but showing off or, you know, then be wanting attention. But no, it was the crab sidle was the most hilarious part. That and this hiding behind the glass door. I was like, what is he thinking?
Did he not have another door? Like the
oh, yeah,
actual
he could have
door
gone into the house. Shut? He just stopped in between the open glass door and the wooden door.
Well, people. Takes all types.
Yeah. So, well. I do have a story, actually, for this week. It's not quite as good as Jenny's. She's dropped a bombshell, but it is quite funny. So, we had the family call. McKelly always likes it when something comes out of the family call.
I sure do.
My mother, who's in her 80s, has bought a new pair of shoes for her daughter, my sister's, wedding, which is in a couple of weeks' time. And my mother is breaking the shoes in because they're kind of sore, you know, they're kind of tight, and uh-huh. She's breaking them in. And she's really suffering. She's either bought shoes that are too small or, you know, just basically she's not having a very pleasant time of it. She's hating these shoes. She wished she'd never bought them kind of thing. And on the call, my kind-hearted and gentle wife said, Caroline, that's my mother's name, you do realize it's a lesbian wedding. They'll be fine with comfortable shoes. That's what Carson said to my mother. I was like, oh, got a point, perhaps.
So is
she was trying to be helpful.
Yes.
No, I think she's breaking in the shoes. My mother would not wear sensible shoes for anything. And the other one, Carson decided to fill the void this week. So the other night, I get home from work and she's laid out materials to make a salad. And then as soon as I get home, she goes off and showers. So I'm left with the materials to make a salad. So I am not one to stand idle and I got working and I started making the salad. One of the things she'd left out was pecans, nuts.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
familiar with them?
I know that she likes those toasted on her salad. So I put a layer of them on a little cookie sheet and I put them in the toaster oven and I toasted the pecans.
Wow. So, above and beyond here.
Well, you know, just I mean, she laid them out for me. It wasn't that hard to infer what she was after. So the salad's almost ready when she gets out of the shower. She comes in the kitchen sort of like, you know, to oversee because she doesn't really trust me with some, you know, reason, but she says, oh, the idea with the pecans was we toast them in the toaster oven. I was like, I already did. And she
one
said,
step ahead of you.
She said, I don't smell burning.
You didn't toast them long enough.
No, I did toast them long enough. She just thought that if I tried to toast them without her supervising, that I would have burned them.
They should have been burned.
You messed it up because you would have messed it up.
I'm like, gee, thanks, I get it. Dear.
You get no respect, I tell
not
you
at
what.
All.
Your shoe story reminded me of my current pair of shoes. I just bought them like, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or so. And I can't say for 100% certainty that the purchasing of the shoes and what happened later are directly correlated, but I feel like they must be. Mm-hmm. So, like, we were out all day, like a couple of days after I bought them, and I was wearing those shoes the whole time. And the next morning, I was sitting on the couch and I got up and went into the kitchen. And all of a sudden, the middle toe on my left foot started stinging like I had stepped on a bug or something and it stung me or bit me. Mm-hmm. And I was looking, you know, as best I could because I'm not that flexible. So I was checking out my toe and I was like, I don't see anything. And then all of a sudden, that same toe started to turn purple, like splotchy purple. And it was quickly happening. It went from nothing to a stinging pain. And then my toe turning a splotchy purple within.
Were you losing your circulation?
2 minutes. Well, so I was like, should I go to the ER? I mean, not the ER, but like the urgent care, you know, the quick doctor place. And Stacy's like, oh, don't be ridiculous. It's just your toe. And I was like, but look at it. It's swelling and turning colors all for no reason. So I happen to have a friend that is an MD. And so I texted him and said, hey, do you have a second for a quick call? And he says, sure. And so I call him and explained what's happening. And he said, here's what's going on. Between that toe and the toe to the left of it, there is a bundle of nerves. You've probably pinched that bundle of nerves some way. Maybe you wore shoes that were too tight or something like that. And you've hit the nerve and it's causing that reaction. So don't panic. It's going to be fine. You don't need to do anything. It'll go away. And within 10 minutes, my toe was back to normal, like nothing had happened. Pain was gone. The stinging was gone. The swelling was gone. And the discoloration was gone.
I've never heard of that.
I've never heard of such a thing. That's incredible.
Neither have I. It was the weird. So I was, good thing I happened to have a friend who's a doctor, or else I would have gone to the doctor and paid a copay, and they'd have been like, yeah, you're fine, go home.
To be fair, the 10-minute drive would have actually taken care of it, unless you happened to wear the same shoes.
You would have gotten out of the car, and it would have been fine.
I would have looked at my, I would have taken my shoe off, and looked at my toe, and went, oh, never mind. I'm going home. So, anyway, tight shoes, they are a problem.
And have you worn the shoes since?
I do. I thought, well, I need to break these things in. I just bought them. But that issue has not happened since.
Oh, so, that's what I was going to ask, yes.
Yeah.
You'd think the other toe on the other foot would get the same treatment at some point.
Anyway, so that was my tight shoe story.
Well, that's all fun and games, but let's get down to business. How did we leave Arya Stark? Jenny, why don't you take the recap?
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes.
Last we saw of Arya, she and Sandor Clegane had arrived at the Twins. Arya was dreaming of being reunited with her mother, the Hound surely dreaming of diving into his vault of gold as his reward for securing the reunion. All turned to dust when Frey's knights attacked King Robb's men. Arya raced for the castle to rescue her mother. The Hound took her in the back of the head with an axe. Probably didn't kill her, right?
Right.
Well, we'll find out, I guess.
I guess so.
McKelly, Jenny, why don't we give the summary of this one? And who provided this summary?
Well, funny enough, I provided this summary.
Hey! And what happens when Jenny provides one? It gets a title.
As usual, I titled my chapter. This one's called The Emptiness Inside. I feel like this chapter is pretty bleak.
Yeah, it is.
Thanks for joining us.
Not much to smile about. Yeah. Why don't you lead us off, Jenny?
Arya feels a hollow place inside where her heart had been now that her parents and brothers are dead. Her head hurts too, though not as badly. She would sleep night and day if Sandor would let her, but he won't. Her dreams are the best part of her life now, wolf dreams. She dreams that most nights of a great wolf pack with her at the lead.
Sandor wakes her roughly every day and has her tend the horses. They have two now, adding a palfrey found wandering aimlessly the morning after the massacre at the Twins. The Hound no longer watches her as closely, but Arya doesn't know where to go if she did leave him. They ride all day every day, but Sandor won't tell her where they're going.
One day, they come across a mortally wounded archer in service to Sir Mark Piper, who describes how a Bolton man befriended him and then attacked him at the Red Wedding. Sandor offers him water and mercy. He accepts both.
When they reach the foothills of the Mountains of the Moon, Sandor finally informs her he intends to ransom her to her Aunt Lysa. Arya wants to return to the Twins to rescue her brother and mother, but he rejects this as nonsense.
That same night, while dreaming, she slips into Nymeria's mind and smells her mother in the river. She pulls her mother's corpse out, only to abandon it when men approach. When she wakes the next morning, Arya dully concedes that Robb and Kat really are dead.
After moving deeper into the foothills, the pair come to a village. It's isolated, so Sandor allows that they need to stop for food and rest. Perhaps they won't know him. The village folk want help fortifying the town, and Sandor agrees to help for food, ale, and a bit of coin.
Sandor learns that the high road to the Vale is too dangerous due to weather and the renewed onslaught of the mountain clans. The new palisade takes 2 weeks to build, but Sandor wants to stay for a while. The Riverlands are full of Freys, so perhaps they can get a letter to her aunt.
However, the Hound has been recognized, so he's paid off with copper, sour ale, and a shoddy sword he traded for his axe. Sandor plans to head for Riverrun, despite the state of the Riverlands. Arya wants the Wall and her brother, but Sandor refuses. He doesn't care about her or her brother. I really like your summary. One thing I'd note, actually, is that you're kind of nicer to the Hound than me and Michele are, because we generally refer to him as the Hound, but you actually remember what his name is and call him Sandor.
Right.
Yeah.
That is true. Yes, yes.
I just feel like it's one of those really conflicted characters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
I do have a bit of sympathy for him.
I do too. It's just my default is to call him the Hound, but I'll try to think about it, because labels matter, you know.
Yes, although I've got the Hound all through our discussion notes here, so. You know, one thing I noticed is that this was an oddly long gap between Arya chapters in this book. It was 13 chapters between this chapter and Arya 11, which is her biggest chapter gap.
Well, he probably just wanted to build the suspense about whether or not she was dead, right?
Right, yes, yeah. Yeah. I looked up, the second longest gap was between Arya 1 and 2, and that was a 10-chapter gap. And I noticed the dates when we recorded Arya 1 and 2. It was June 21st and August 30th of 2022. So Wow. More than a year ago that we started down this journey with Arya, and she still hasn't gotten to anywhere useful.
He probably also wanted to avoid more traveling chapters.
Yes, that very well might be. I was just going to say she's really outpacing everyone else. Tyrion and Jon are both at 8. So,
despite taking her foot off the gas here at the end of the book. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
But I was going to say, the other thing that's unusual about this as a chapter is the time frame of this chapter. Usually the individual chapters are quite tightly bound in time. They're often like one day or less than one day for that character. But this
one
is
conversation,
weeks and weeks.
Even.
Yeah, this is a long chapter. So we may have to do another sort of moon study to find out where this fits into the timeline.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because it's definitely set them back. I mean, I can see why he's willing to risk going back into the Riverlands, because it's been at least 3 weeks. So. It's calmed down. It may not be completely safe, but the revelry at the Red Wedding is over at this point.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, they do see Frey knights hunting stray Northmen, so I guess they're still out looking around.
But they saw that before they had the 2 weeks in the...
Yes, yeah, yes. So... Did it say how long they were in that village? Did it say 2 weeks?
2 weeks, yes.
So for me, the chapter starts with Arya feeling like the empty hole inside herself, as you mentioned, Jenny, will never feel any better. I want to reassure the little girl that it will feel better, but it is going to take a long, long time, especially for someone who's got absolutely nothing to do but brood on it and is getting no comfort from anyone. It's going to take even longer.
Right.
Well, I was just going to say, She doesn't really have any support system either,
yeah.
So...
Yes.
That's not making it better.
Nope. No.
This poor little girl, she's lost everyone in her family, as far as she knows, but Sansa, who's in the clutches of the enemy. And you know, it made me wonder if she has any thoughts of going to King's Landing to try and rescue Sansa, like she wanted to do to go to the Twins and try and rescue her mother. Because she doesn't know about the Purple Wedding yet. She doesn't know Sansa's not there any longer. So,
has she heard Sansa's married?
We don't really see her think about Sansa too much, do we?
Yeah, no. We don't.
She did think about Jon.
She does,
though.
Yes. Yes, she does. You know, she wants to sleep all day. And when she sleeps, she's been having these wolf dreams. And You know, it's, I'm sure the feeling of having a pack again, that seems to be the thing she is really enticing to her, that's really comforting to her, is having this pack that she has while she's dreaming these wolf dreams. So surely very comforting. It's kind of similar to Bran's warging after the sack of Winterfell, where he was warging so much to the point that Jojen was kind of worried that he was staying away too long and he was going to, you know, going to lose himself in summer. Only Bran knew that it's warging. Arya just thinks she's dreaming. So she hasn't quite figured out that these things are really happening yet.
Well, you know, she also has a concussion.
Right. <That's true. laughs> Probably does.
I mean, he hit her in the back of the head with an axe. I was going to ask you guys what you thought of that, actually, because he is 6'6", and she is a little girl. Was it necessary to hit her with an axe?
Couldn't he have just grabbed her by the back of her shirt and hoisted her up, you know?
But maybe knowing her, he was expecting to have to struggle with her the whole way out of there.
Oh. But,
maybe. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not defending his actions. I hadn't thought of the parallels with Bran. It is interesting because it really is the same thing. After the loss and devastation, to sort of like find yourself wanting to be permanently in your wolf. But the difference is, of course, is that he's a prince being looked after by people who loved him. She just gets kicked out of her reveries, you know. They didn't do that to Bran.
Cold water dumped on her she's dreaming. In both Arya and Bran are using these wolf dreams to fill a void. Bran is just relishing the mobility of being in summer, being able to run and jump and fight. And Arya is more focused on having this pack and her, you know, having a family around her. So, you know, they're both filling missing components in their lives.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhall. You can find the link in our show notes.
If Sandor doesn't, you know, if it doesn't work out selling her to various relatives, he should start a babysitting adventure.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah, he'd be great at that.
People would line up.
I use only the flat of the axe.
Yes, exactly. That's a great tagline.
That is.
So his decision to go to Lysa over the Blackfish, do we think that's the right decision? I mean, obviously by the end of the chapter, it sort of reverts back to the Blackfish, but... to me, it made a lot of sense because Lysa, Arya makes the point that neither of them really know her. So it's not like they're going to go, that's Arya Stark. Thank God.
There's a secret Tully.
Well, I did wonder about that. Is there something that she would know that Lysa could quiz her on?
Right. Or Brendan or the Blackfish could.
Yeah, either.
But here's something to think about. Lysa knew Sandor. She was at court the same time he was.
Oh, right. Yes.
How would she feel about him showing up? I'm sure she didn't think very highly of him.
Probably not. He was Joffrey's dog.
Yeah.
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 I mean, would she even believe him?
Yeah. I mean, that actually makes life more difficult for Arya because she may believe Arya and not believe the Hound.
And one detail that just came to mind right now is Arya is the only one of the kids that have the Stark look. So Liza is certainly more familiar with what her sister looks like than what the Starks look like. So she doesn't even have the auburn hair or the Stark or the Tully facial features. So that could be problematic there. But I do feel like, especially with Blackfish Tully, he's got his mental faculties about him enough. He's pragmatic enough that there's got to be a way that Arya could convince him, I am Arya Stark, Catelyn's daughter. I just feel like there would be a way.
Maybe she could give some really good details.
Yeah. You
know, something that only they would know.
Right.
But one thing's for sure is his big payday's gone. He was hoping to do the Scrooge McDuck thing, like in the recap there, and dive into his vault of gold. That is gone. Now I feel like he's just hoping to find someone to take her off his hands for something. Give me something for her, and I'll be happy at this point.
Yeah, and she's still a payday compared to what he's got. I mean, you know, she's something.
Yes.
He's got nothing else, but he has given up on trying to keep her with him. She could ride off if she wants to, but, like, you know, she has no better options, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
At least with him, yeah. She might end up back with a family member.
Yeah, I definitely, I really think she could escape if she cared to. It'd be one less thing for the Hound to deal with, but she's got nowhere else to go, so.
I think her state of mind right now has her not thinking clearly.
I agree, yes. Yeah, she's exhausted. As you said, concussed, in despair over her family. It'd be easier to just let the Hound protect you, lead you wherever he's taking you. It doesn't really matter at this point. Forage for meals, all the things, and just go with the flow.
And actually, thinking about what Jenny said here has made me think about the fact that Arya insists to the Hound that they go back to the Twins, that they could try to rescue Robin Catelyn. And the Hound is like, you know, treats her like she's stupid because they're both dead. But her memories of that night must be extremely confused, because they would have been confused had she not been smacked across the head with an axe. But that would only lead to even more fog around what actually happened that night.
Yes, that's true. I had not thought about that. Yeah, I'm actually a little bit surprised the Hound hasn't left her along the side of the road or in some village somewhere. I think at this point, he just kind of feels responsible for this young girl and he's too much of a big old softy to just be like, all right, kid, you're on your own. Good luck.
You do have to give him a little bit of props for he's still feeding her and he hasn't left her, like you guys said. So.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
I think he's using the payday as an excuse to keep her with him until he can find someone responsible and hopefully a family member to hand her off to. And if he gets something in return, that extra good. But really, I think he's just trying to get rid of her in the best way that he can at this point.
Does it make you want to reassess his relationship with Sansa? Because his relationship with Sansa always seemed like kind of nice, but also a little bit creepy.
Speaking of that, I wanted to point out that he keeps bringing up the singing episode like she sang for him willingly.
Right.
You know, like he makes it sound like, oh, your sister sang a song for me. How nice of her. You know, that's not what happened. That was right. Under duress, you know.
Yes,
so
yes.
Do you guys think that he's being unreliable narrator, or do you think that he's trying to paint himself better in his own head?
I think it's the latter. I think he's. I think deep down, he probably knows how that situation, although he was very drunk. So maybe he only remembers the fact that she sung for him now that I think about it. But
yeah,
otherwise, I think he's just rewritten it in his head that she sang for him and leaving it at that, forgetting about the details of how the singing came about.
True.
So the pair come across one of Mark Piper's bowmen who is dying of a wound that he received, as Jenny mentioned in the summary, and the Hound gives the man a mercy killing, and he tells Arya, he kind of demonstrates to Arya how to kill a man. He puts the knife to the man's chest and kind of uses his body weight to ease it into his heart, and he says to Arya, this is how you kill a man. And Arya thinks to herself, that's one way. And the Hound bragged way back in Arya 1 of A Game of Thrones. That's the chapter where Jon and Arya were watching Joffrey and Rob and Tommen and Bran sparring in the yard. And he kind of brags to everyone that he killed his first man when he was 12. Arya could, you know, say, hold my beer on this one, because she was, I think, like 9. I've kind of lost how old she is right now, but I think she was about 9 at the time she killed that stable boy during the sacking of the Hand of the King. And
yes.
Since then, I'm pretty sure she killed some men at the God's Eye Stronghold when Emery Lorch was attacking. And she definitely killed the guard at Harrenhal to escape there. So She's killed multiple people, and she's at least 2 years younger than he was when he killed his first man. So, I mean, that's the level of just, I don't even know what the right word is, trauma that she is dealing with here compared to even someone like the Hound, who clearly struggles from trauma.
Yeah.
Yes, it can't be doing anything for her development.
No. No, she's, I mean, we all love her, but she is going to grow up to be a different person than she could have otherwise grown up to be, were it not for all these things she's experiencing. I mean, her protector sticks a knife through someone's heart in front of her, and it's barely a footnote to her story, you know?
Yeah, it's just another day.
Exactly, yeah. But for the rest of us, it would be, you know, the biggest trauma of our lives to have witnessed this. But for her, it's number 76 on the roll call, you know?
Yeah, especially age 10.
Yeah. So what finally convinces Arya that Kat and Rob are dead is another wolf dream she has, where she's as Nymeria. She gets a scent of something and she dives into the river and pulls out a body from the river. And this body is that of Catelyn, her mother. She tries to sort of nudge it and revive it kind of thing. But just at that point, a group of men arrive and she... Sort of Nymeria thinks, you know, there's an order to things. I'm in charge of the pack, but we defer to men. We run away from men. We don't fight them. So she does that because she's established that the body really is dead. There's no saving it. I'm sure she would have fought the men had Catelyn been alive, but she wasn't. She was actually dead. We knew that. We weren't smacked across the head by an axe during the Red Wedding. It felt like it, but...
Yes, it did.
Definitely
so
did.
We knew this was going to be the case, but now Arya wakes up convinced by this, which is, it's interesting, because like you said, she doesn't know she's warging the way that Bran did, but when she has this dream, she accepts it as the truth.
Right. She, I think, sees it as a sign. Like, I had this dream... It was very real feeling. I know my mother is dead. I don't know that she realizes that it was really happening.
Actually, her mother. Okay, so, yeah.
So to the juiciest question of this chapter, who are these men? Because they could be anyone. I mean, chances are, I mean, they could be Starks fleeing. I mean, because this is not too long after the battle, or rather the Red Wedding. So, you know, these could be Stark men fleeing. They could be Frey men looking for any survivors, like you said. But the way they're described in the book is that they are bedecked in various colors.
Yeah, the description refers to it because, you know, when they wolf dream, they see things through their wolf brain. So they see long claws in their hand, in their hands or whatever, you know, assuming those are swords.
Right.
And I think the colors are, she thinks of them as wings. So to me, it felt like banners flapping, which, you know, my first thought when these men were approaching was that they were the Brotherhood without banners. But I think by definition, if they have banners, they aren't the Brotherhood without banners.
Do you think it could have been more of Frey men looking for Northmen and they just rode on but it scared the wolves off?
Definitely possible. Yeah. In fact, I think they would take zero interest in the dead body that the wolf was nosing at. They would just assume the wolf was eating carrion, and they wouldn't care one iota. They might go through its pockets, but no more than that.
And I think the description of the scene is that there are dead bodies all through this section of the river here. So probably didn't even notice one body that was laying there on the side of the river.
But my counter to your rejection of the Brotherhood Without Banners is that these are guys who came from various houses and wearing the clothes that they were wearing. And so they might have sigils on them of the houses that they used to represent. I take your point. It feels like they should remove them, but maybe they don't.
Maybe the
Brotherhood...
Can I point out that the wolf refers to them as wings, which makes me think it is a banner? Because why would she think of them as wings?
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe the Brotherhood Without Banners does have, like, some kind of banner. That would make them have a banner, though. So I don't know. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense for them to have a banner, but maybe it's just a, like, random cloth pieces sewn together.
Yeah.
Could be.
The bit that made me think it was them is the number of colors that are mentioned, because at least three colors get mentioned, and most of the sigils of the big houses aren't that colorful. They tend to be two-tone, you know, and it felt like this could be a hodgepodge of things. That's what I'm getting at. That's why I think it could be the Brotherhood Without Banners. And if it's the Brotherhood Without Banners, then let me make my little prayer here. There was a member of the Brotherhood Without Banners who has a very special talent. His name is Thoros of Mir.
And they're going to say Harwin, and he was really good at riding horses.
Well, there's all right. Let me be more specific. Many members of the Brotherhood Without Banners have a special talent, but one of them, Thoros of Mir, his special talent is bringing the dead back to life, and he knows that Arya Stark lost her father and was very sad about it, and asked him if he could bring him back. Might he do Arya a favor and bring her mother back from the dead? He said he couldn't do it because too much time had elapsed. Not that much time has elapsed here.
If it was the Brotherhood, you know, I guess there's a possibility that could happen. Sure.
Except he's only ever done it on Beric, right?
As far as we know, I don't think he even knew he could do it
until Beric. Yeah,
he brought.
How much time do you think can be elapsed before it's too long?
Yeah, I'm thinking this was just a day or so.
I think most people agree that it's been 2 days.
2 days.
2 days. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good to know. Yeah,
River was probably quite cold.
Not too long. Yes.
Keep her fresh.
Oh, yes. That's true. Sure. Yeah. Although I think the body was a bit bloated.
Yeah, it would be.
That could be a problem.
The water would seep in. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, let me dream.
Well, at this point, I want to test out a new perk that we are considering for our Buy Me a Coffee sustainers. And so one thing we've been discussing is adding spoilers to our conversation, and those will be removed for the normal episode, and either they will be left in for the sustainer episode, or they will be cut out a separate audio file for the sustainers. So we haven't decided which yet. So if you're listening to the normal episode, you're about to hear us going back to the next thing. Actually, I think we're going to talk about the village in the Mountains of the Moon.
So, in the Mountains of the Moon, well, welcome back, listeners. In the Mountain of the Moon village.
For them, it was seamless. It was instantaneous return.
In the Mountains of the Moon village, we hear about some old friends. Timit One Eye of the Burn Men and Gunther Son of Grun from the Stone Crows. They're back in the Mountains of the Moon, causing mischief with their newfound castle forged steel. So Timit fought for Tywin in the Battle of the Green Fork, and then accompanied Tyrion to King's Landing, one of Tyrion's top enforcers. He fought in the Kingswood against Stannis' scouts, so he was sort of like in the he was fighting the Battle of the Blackwater before the battle actually began, because he was out there actually keeping them at bay. When he tried to return to King's Landing to claim his reward, he was driven off, which was rather unfair on him.
Agreed. And then, so Gunther, son of Grun, he stayed back in the Mountains of the Moon when Tyrion continued on into the Riverlands, I guess. He was going to raise other clans for the cause, but we hadn't heard from him since. So, you know, I guess he's been... He's been busy raising other clans.
Raising a whole clan of little Gunthers.
I guess so. I was a little bit disappointed that there was no mention of Chella in the Black Ears.
Exactly. You got to wonder how many ears she has on her necklace.
Right. She was also repelled from King's Landing when she tried to return to the Battle of Blackwater, after the Battle of Blackwater. So she should be here, you would think, in the... back in the Mountains of the Moon, back home. But yeah, like you said, Simon, they've got this, they've got good steel and weapons and armor. And, you know, so it seems like life has improved since Tyrion fulfilled at least part of the promise.
Life has improved for the barbarian hordes of the Mountains of the Moon, less so for the villagers who were having to build a palisade against those weapons.
Yes.
Yes, yes, that's true. Depends on the perspective.
So they stay in the village for a while. The villagers assume that she's that Arya is the Hound's daughter. She does not even waste her breath contradicting them. In some ways, it makes sense. I mean,
I just thought that was a good way to show her state of mind, because she spent almost two books being confused for a boy, and it always used to make her mad, even though she had to put up with it, you know. And now suddenly finally recognizes that she's a girl, and, you know, they're like, oh, you're his daughter. And she's just like, yeah, whatever. And this whatever. This is a guy on her list.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yes. Good point. Yeah, the thing that stood out to me about her time in the village was just how poorly adjusted she's become to normal life. She's so wild and angry and immediately lashes out at the village for its normalcy and the girl that follows her around for her innocence. And, you know, Arya's never been the most refined of the Stark daughters, but and I don't think she would have liked the company of the girl before Arya's life fell apart, but I don't think she would have reacted as she did.
We didn't mention this in the summary, right? So we should say what she did. She took the girl's doll from her and cut it with a knife and threw it in the river. Is that right?
Yes.
My comment about this was the little girl seems kind of like hurt by all this, and you'd imagine she would be hurt by this, but she's a 10-year-old girl who lives in a village in the Mountains of the Moon. I'm thinking she should be a little bit more rugged than she's portrayed here. Not Arya Stark rugged, but, you know.
Right,
that's
sure.
a fair point.
But have yes, seen a fair few things. Point. Yes, I think it is. I think so. Yeah, I wondered if Arya, the innocence of the girl is what bothered Arya. She saw a reflection of what Arya had become versus what she should be at that age, and didn't like it, and therefore took it out on the little girl. Tearing up Sir Soldier, that was the name of the doll, and tossing it in the river, it touched me a bit, because, as Simon will be shocked to know, I had a special animal, stuffed animal, and a special pillow when I was a little boy, so... it struck a chord that she tore it up and threw it in the river.
Simon's face is priceless right now, everyone.
Are we learning this on our 4-year anniversary? What the heck is going on? Come on, we need names.
Yeah, well, so I was super creative with my special things naming as a little boy. I had a bear, and his name was Barry.
You sound like my daughter.
Spelled bear E.
Bear with a Y?
Yes, I guess so. I don't know that I ever wrote it out. Yes, probably, yes. And my pillow was named Pibbs. So I had Barry and Pibbs were my two most special things to me as a little boy.
You want to give us an estimate of when you stopped sleeping with these two?
So I left them at a friend's house. When I was about in junior high, I'd say, and then I just got too cool for them and never went back and got them, and I don't know whatever happened to Barry and Pibbs.
Can you just explain junior high to everybody else on Earth? Like, just give me an age.
I was probably like 11.
Oh, that's so sweet. That's about the right time to cast them aside. Although leaving them at a friend's house is a little bit cold.
That is so sad, McKelly. You know, now they're in their little toy heaven wondering what happened to you. Oh, and how dare you leave them.
Don't think every time I watch Toy Story, I get affected when I think about Barry and Pibbs and think, what did I do? Poor Barry.
We're going to edit out the next 4 minutes of crying. Thank you, Jenny.
That's something else I've got to think about, McKelly, in my random brain. I'm going to think, poor Barry. That's awful.
Poor Barry. At least he had Pibbs. They had each other. They were like Woody
and
Buzz.
You were on your own. You had no one.
I had no one left.
So, back to what we're supposed to be talking about here.
Oh, yeah. What were we talking about?
So, Sandor, aka the Hound, Jenny, I think in this is you. You were also worried about his state of mind. Why? Because he didn't kill someone.
Well, I don't know that I'm worried about him. I'm just saying maybe he's turned some kind of corner there. Because the old hound would have been like, are you calling me a coward? And he would have gutted him, you know. So this person's like, I think you lost your taste for fighting. And the hound's like, eh, yeah, just pay me.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Fair point. I was surprised that he considered hunkering down in that village. You know, that he was willing to be domesticated for a time here and just be a villager for
a bit. That's another point that leads to him maybe turning a corner, is that he was willing to do that.
Unfortunately, he was rebuffed, which is not going to help his already low self-esteem. And personally, I thought it was kind of not a wise decision by that town elder. I mean, pass on him because a man like him brings blood? Well, so do the clansmen. And if they attack, there's going to be a lot more of their bloodshed if the hound is there than if he's not there.
Right. You'd think it'd be good to have a big fighter on the inside.
Yeah. Right. So he's worth taking a flyer on.
He's also a big drinker and...
Oh, right.
And believed to be a coward who might run away when the
clans
arrive.
I guess it's just the concern was that when the winter comes, they won't be able to feed him because he's a big guy. And he's not worth it if he's not going to stick around for a fight because he lost his nerve.
Yeah.
True.
So Arya, she wants to go to the wall to be reunited with Jon. And, you know, I feel like the Hound does a pretty good job of explaining the difficulties of getting to the wall, pretty much how it's a near impossibility. They have to get through the Freys. Then they have to get through the Neck. Then they have to get past Moat Cailin and the Ironborn. And then there's the Ironborn in the north. And it's about 1,000 leagues between where they are and the wall. So, the impossibilities aside, I think there is a bit of merit to the plan. And I see Simon's confused face. It's not so much for Arya. Because I think if Arya shows up, Jon will be excited to see her initially. And then he'll be like, well, what am I supposed to do with you now?
Uh-huh.
And she would end up in Molestown probably until he can figure out what to do with her.
Yes.
It's not so much for her that I think that this idea has merit. I think it's more for the Hound. He's kind of rudderless right now. You know, he has no master to serve like he's used to having. He's got no prospect for employment. He's aimlessly ranging around looking for somewhere to dump Arya. His only goal seems to be his kill his older brother. Why not join a cause? Why not join a brotherhood where maybe he could rise high at the Night's Watch? He's got a lot of attributes that they could use. He's pretty intelligent.
Do you know what he could get at the Night's Watch? He could get some chicken and some
There
wine.
You go.
Two
See?
Things he really that's, wanted. That's true.
Yeah.
That's
so true. He could actually be a very useful member to the Night's Watch if he cared to join them.
Counterpoint, if I might.
Please
he
do.
He doesn't like fire. And you really need to be within arm's reach of fire at all times if you're in the Night's Watch. He's a warm weather fella. He needs to go south.
I see. There is that issue. I hadn't thought about that issue.
I mean, it's not a deal breaker, but also he has no fealty to anything. He's not going to want to do something like that. He wants to be a lone wolf, you know?
I agree. I just feel like if he did do it, he might find his place. And
that's
I think it
possible.
Would really benefit him.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the chapter ends with the Hound. When you said that he lays out the reasons that he doesn't want to take her to the wall, I thought you were segueing into what he says at the end of the chapter, which is, I don't care about you or your brother. That he himself, Sandor, has his own brother. And it sounds like what he means is, that his goal now, he's come up with an idea for what to do with his life, and that is to seek revenge on his brother. That's certainly how I read it as well. And
I did
it
as
just
well.
So happens that taking her back in the direction of Riverrun takes him back in the direction of his brother. So,
yes,
it does.
The two it things does. Can become one.
Very conveniently.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we do some background?
Okay, well, there wasn't a whole lot to talk about in this chapter. I struggle mightily for what to put in here. So let's look a bit more at the Mountain Clans, shall we? Now, We've known about them for a while, and we got to know several individuals and the clans through Tyrion's interactions. And actually, we told you ages ago that their origins come from the Andal invasion. The first men who refused to accept the rule of the new Andal overlords fled the Vale and hid in the foothills here in the Mountains of the Moon. And not unsurprisingly, there is still bad blood between the Knights of the Vale and the clans. But the relations aren't much better at lower altitudes, as the clans don't trust the lowland lords either. Now, we've talked about how clan culture is egalitarian, which is rather forward-thinking for a group most considered to be savages. And speaking of structure, most of the smaller clans are actually splinters of larger ones. However, it's hard to survive as a small clan, so many are either wiped out by the Knights of the Vale or consumed by larger clans. Now, Timmit's burned men are actually an example of a small clan that broke off from a larger one to find success. The burned men split off from the Painted Dogs after the Dance of the Dragons. There's actually a cool story about the early days of the burned men, but I believe they're going to come up again later, so we're going to save that story for then.
So, comparison with the television show. So, one difference was that the television Hound didn't really knock Arya out at the twins. And as a result, she got to witness Robb's body being paraded around with Grey Wynn's head in place of Robb's. The television Hound doesn't trust her enough yet to not run away. But she voices that she'd be dead without him and has nowhere to go. So, she sort of like tries to allay his fears. I mean, she's not really trying to allay his fears. She's just speaking her truth, you know.
Yes.
They pass some Frey men, one of whom is bragging about the death of the Starks, and Arya dismounts and skewers the braggart with Sandor's knife that she slipped from his belt. He leaps down and takes care of the other three, asking her very nicely if she would not do that kind of thing again without pre-warning him. So that's all that's captured, really, of this. He does say he's going to go to Lysa Arryn, but the whole Mountains of the Moon village, none of that happens in the TV show.
I remember that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I had to do, actually? I really wasn't sure. I kept watching Arya's scenes to see what came next, and then something comes next, and I wasn't sure if that was TV show addition that I should put in this chapter. So then I had to go read the next Arya chapter to see what was coming in Arya book, and yeah, that is coming in book, so I had to keep that one out. Pedantry Corner, there's no pedantry that I could find this week, and it's not just because you don't like it. It's because I couldn't find any.
Because you couldn't find any? Yes.
Uh-huh.
I don't look for it, so.
So, news and notes.
Well, so, turns out George Martin is suing.
Ha! Bring it! Bring it, George! Let's see who's got the deeper pockets.
Take a breath. Thankfully, he's not suing us yet.
Oh, okay.
Anyway. Actually, he and several other well-known authors, such as John Grisham and Jodi Picoult, are suing OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT. So we all know that ChatGPT does what it does by consuming huge amounts of information and data. Well, the lawsuit claims that some of that information includes their copyrighted works consumed without their authorization. And some of the claims specific to A Song of Ice and Fire include that ChatGPT users have had the program write prequels and finish A Song of Ice and Fire. Although, from what I've heard, the writing isn't very good, but I guess it's something. Mm. And when you've waited 11 years with nothing, something is better than nothing. So,
I think I'm going to hold off on that.
Yeah.
Yes, me too.
Until I've read it.
So we'll see how that all plays out.
We have two new Buy Me a Coffee sustainers. That's very exciting. Claire and Valentina have both joined at the Knight of the Realm level. We welcome you both. We hope we'll be interacting with you soon and hope you enjoy the perks of membership. Thanks.
Yes. Thank you very much. Very much look forward to interacting with you. And we also just wanted to say thank you that, as we mentioned at the top of the show, this is the 4-year anniversary of our show. And so thank you to all who have stuck with us from the very early beginnings, and to those of you who have just recently found us. We read every message that you send us, and of course we read all of your reviews, and we just appreciate it so much, and we just want to thank you for for making this 4 years so enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you all.
I want to thank you guys for all your hard work.
Pshaw.
And for providing us with such great entertainment every week.
Well, thank you, Jenny.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for coming on our special episode here. So,
yeah, it's been fun.
It has been
fun. We might have to have weekly anniversaries.
Like Molly's first Mondays of every exactly. week for senior year.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. All right, let's draw a conclusion under this one. So Arya is headed back towards Riverrun again.
Again?
She's frustrated by the idea. We can understand why. She's been trying to get there for a long time. She's like, she's in orbit around it. She sort of like just can't get
there.
That's
what she does. Yeah, she's been making for Riverrun for what, 12 chapters now? And the closest that she's been was before she met the Brotherhood Without Banners, which was like Arya 2 or something of this book. So it's been a long time and she's gotten no closer.
Yeah, and there isn't a Stark who's had a great story here. Every Stark has had it pretty miserable, but Arya uh-huh. might be near the top of the list. Maybe even ahead of some of the dead ones, honestly.
Sure.
Some of the dead ones had some fun along the way. Arya has had almost none.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Since the sacking of the Tower of the Hand, it's been just a terrible, terrible situation for her.
Her dancing lessons. That was the last time she had sort of genuine enjoyment in her life. You know?
Right. Absolutely.
And even that's tainted now because every time she tries to sort of channel it, she's reminded the fact she's a 10-year-old girl and gets smacked down.
Right.
Almost every time. She has used some of it successfully, but...
Yeah, in this chapter, she was practicing with the stick, her needlework, and then, you know, had a flashback memory of what had happened to her mother and Rob, and, you know, broke down, smashed the stick, and didn't want to practice any longer, so... Yeah. Rough all around for her. But, you know, might the Hound and Arya be unwillingly forming some sort of bond here? Or is this still just a marriage of convenience?
I don't know if the Hound forms bonds.
That's why I said unwillingly. Maybe he doesn't realize that he's forming a bond here. I mean, both could dump either. Nope. Both could dump the other, but neither have. And... You know, they have reasons that they say why they're not, but, you know, they're still together.
I think the theory that Jenny voiced, that Sandor is in fact just a big softy, is perhaps the true. And that's, it keeps coming out. He keeps trying to hide it. And he's always rough and horrible to the person that he's protecting. But he protects them fiercely and cares for them and just can't voice it any other way than being a fierce protector. I think that's really happening. Arya, on the other hand, will still chant his name during her evening prayers. So I think she's the one who's less likely to bridge this gap.
Oh, I could see that. I could see that, yeah.
Yeah.
Where are we going next, McKelly? Do tell.
Well, next up, we're headed to King's Landing. And you remember all that trouble that Tyrion and Tywin kept saying that Tyrion's mouth was going to cause for him? Well, all that trouble comes home to roost next chapter.
Bet it does. I bet it does.
Yeah. So you're going to want to tune in for the trial.
Okay.
The Tyrion Lannister trial.
So there's four ways that you could help us. You could leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review, particularly on Apple Podcasts. That would be great. You could buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. You can buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostharrenhal. Become a sustainer at the Lord Paramount or Knight of the Realm level, as Claire and Valentina did this week, and that will help keep the lights on. Or you could just donate directly to our cause through our website, ghostsofharrenhal.buzzsprout.com.
Do you want more interaction with these jokers? Keep up on the latest GOH news and developments. Check us out on social media. Follow us on Twitter at Ghost Heron Hall, Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
Jenny, thanks so much. These episodes are way more fun when you're here. I promise you.
Well, thanks a lot. It was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening.
Everybody come back next time when Simon and McKelly do the Scooby-Doo ending.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.